Hello and welcome. You've tuned into the next edition of Beyond the Darkness, the best in paranormal talk radio. I have to apologize to everybody for Wednesday's show, which didn't get posted till Thursday, as you all know by now, and was a rerun, which I don't like to do when we've only got the three live shows a week. But I've been battling this brutal chest cold, and with Tim not feeling well, me not feeling well, we elected to just run a favorite episode from back in 2016 with Dr. Eben Alexander. So if you haven't heard it yet, please give it a listen. I think you guys are going to really love it. Thank you all for tuning in, being a part of our world. Listen, I've talked wildly openly about my family and the fact that I have so many blasted children and some of the fun and weird things that have happened. And if you've listened, you even heard me talk about this with two of my daughters about, I don't know, 6-7 months ago. They joined me on the show to talk about the paranormal. And, you know, I love insights into children and what do they experience. We hear all of these claims that children are more intuitive, that children have the ability to see, and we've been given so many rationales for why that is. So I wanted to delve a little bit more into that. And today we've got a very creepy theater of the mind coming up a little bit later. But joining us is Kylie Holmes. She is a naturally intuitive person. She's refined her skills over many years through the combined methods, regular meditation, self-development techniques, and mind, body, spirit, and soul-related courses. She's the mother of four old souls, and she's also a writer, an intuitive angel therapist, Reiki master, and past life regression therapist. We'll have a link up to her website, touchedbyanangel.me.uk. You'll find that on today's episode, so just click on that and you can find out more about our guest. Today we're going to talk about mysterious friends, these imaginary friends, these beings that we all remember having at one point in our life. What exactly are they? And why are children more attuned? What is the real story behind that? Kylie, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
As a child, I look back and I try to remember if I had an imaginary friend that kind of fits outside the parameters of just, you know, pretend. And I remember having, when I was very little, I remember having conversations with the air a few times, but I also was seeing my grandmother when I was very young. So I can't remember if it was when I was speaking to her and, you know, directly and nobody else could see it, or if it was something along those lines. It seems a lot of childhood memories like that, that I've spoken to people, have been kind of subverted. They're almost forgotten that those moments happen. And have you heard a lot about that, especially doing regression therapy? Do you have a lot of people that have those quote-unquote imaginary friends that they end up forgetting about as they become adults?
Yeah, I've started researching this because of my own children. My eldest is 20 now, and when she was 20 this week, actually, on April the 3rd. And when she was about 3 or 4, she would look and into thin air. And I would help. I'm based in the UK, and I asked my health visitor, you know, do you have any information on imaginary friends? And that's what really sparked this obsessive, I would call it, research. Next year, my book is 10 years old, and I've been asked to write a sequel, and that would be 21 years worth of research of stories. Talking to basically people from around the world with stories of when they get into spiritual development, meditation, they start to remember the imaginary friend. And it's different for different people. And it's just quite magical that there are many people around the world that remember the imaginary friends or a spirit guide or in the intuitive side of themselves.
Why do you think it is that as a child, We're imaginative. We're creative. We have imaginary friends. As an adult, we're mentally, unstable if we're talking to unseen forces. Why do you think that there's that kind of strange dichotomy in the whole idea?
That's a really good question. I think also as adults, as you and I are adults now, we have the rational mind. I have a 5-year-old, Ruby, and she's very open, and my experiences of her. My dad had cancer of the bowel, lung, and kidney, but in three separate instances. And every time she told me that he was unwell, she saw shadows around him. Now, was that her imagination? I like to think that she was connecting to some spiritual aspect of my father. The reason being is because as a parent, I'm very good at not trying to put my children down when they say something. If they say something spooky, my ears prick up. I think also as well is as adults, we have the rational mind. We, was it this trick of the light? Was it me? Was it them? Was it the alcohol? Because a lot of people do tend to relax and have a drink and they, as I call it, sherbet, have a few sherbets, a few beers, and then they start to relax and see things. But with a child, okay, you have left brain and right brain. And I noticed with my own 4 children, my son is 13, and in the UK, the education system needs to change. So, for example, from the ages of 0 to 7, we are intuitively right brain. Then they learn math problem from maths, English, that kind of thing, especially in the UK, from the age of 8. And so that left brain becomes more dominant. And in some aspects of childhood, the right brain goes. They become very logical minded. So when they are round about the early ages, children are naturally intuitive. They're still connected to the spirit world. They're not conditioned like us. To think it was a trick of a light, that kind of thing. And that is why so many children have seen grandma, grandfather, siblings that have passed in spirit, animals, because there's not conditioning. But some of us keep that intuitive side and we develop it. And I think also it's a part of our soul growth. It's a part of who we are as an individual as we grow on the earth plane. But somebody could argue with me, a skeptic, which I have met them. But for me, why would you put a child's imagination down? Because you are basically, you're knocking the self-esteem out of them. And I think that's wrong. As a parent, I don't think that's right.
I don't know many people that will, knock down the imagination of a child. I mean, some will tell them, it's just an imaginary friend. It's not really cool. There. I understand that aspect of it. I don't know that, and having had friends whose kids did that, I've watched it, and it's always been supportive, but trying to just rationalize with the child. And I think that's, again, because parents don't know.
Yeah.
How do you give advice on how to deal with something? That's, to me, is one of the most terrifying deals as a parent. And I've always done my best to make sure that my family's secure from the paranormal, that dark things, that irritating, malevolent, whatever, ghosts don't get to my kids. Because what do you do? Somebody breaks into your house, you can grab them by the collar and at least fight them. If it's a ghost, exactly. It's not like you can snag them up and pound them out of your house.
No, I mean, it would be good if you can do that. I mean, I watched Ghost the other night with Patrick Swayze, and that sort of brought, with Whoopi Goldberg, and that's a magical film about how we perceive, energy and spirit. But for me, when my kids were growing up, bear in mind I've had 4 miscarriages as well, and when the children used to get woken up at night, I would say, go into the bedroom, and I would say in a very loud voice, whoever you are, go away. This is my home. If you want to wake up my kid, if you want to talk to me, come to me in the hours of 9 to 5. I put boundaries down like you would do with a normal person. And people think, well, they won't listen. But in Celtic times, do you remember that they used to build roundhouses? Because spirit are very good at being in the corner of the room, because our naked eye, a human naked eye, can't see it. So I remember my son would wake up, and what I did was I got tough. I put four rose quartz crystals in the corner of his bedroom, and I said, every time, God bless, send to light. In other words, get lost, in stronger language, get out of my house. And then what I did was, for a parent, I cleansed the house, I blended the house, I brought the angels in, I smudged the house with sage. I had the front door open to the back door, and I said, go. And that, and I became a very strong parent to say to the unseen world, get out of my house. And that's what I did. Because yeah, you're right, you can get hold of someone who comes in your house and you can tell them to go, but I feel from my own experiences you can do that with spirit too.
Right, by kind of setting that intent. And that's what I've often told people that are dealing with that is, first of all, just by speaking out. A lot of times the spirits, I don't think they realize that they're causing you fear. They don't even realize you sense them some of the times.
Well, exactly, because you could walk into somebody's house, and also I think it's their soul plan that they are not going to cross over to the other side. Because remember, you know, you've still got ghosts from the Middle Ages, especially in the UK, that seeing the light, they thought it was the devil. They thought it was the dark side, yeah? So they wouldn't go. They wouldn't cross over, because if they crossed over, they thought they would go to hell. And that brings another story. I did this Karuna Reiki course back in Margate, gosh, 2002. And I met this guy called Roberto, gorgeous Italian man, but he was absolutely scared of Diablo, which is the devil. And when he was growing up, his mother would say, Diablo would get you. And he told her this story, and he was a grown man of 30, but my giddy aunt, as I say to my kids, you could see the fear in him about Diablo. So what I'm saying is like, if you have that intention, you know, God bless, turn to the light, other words, get lost. I really do believe in my work, empowering you as an individual, not putting the fear of God in you or the fear of whatever. You know, people say to me, if I saw, don't tell me if I'm going to die. And I said, look, love, if I saw death, I'll be at that door quicker than you. I'm more about empowering somebody and my children. What I'm saying is about crushing their self-esteem and that lot. Some people have their own fears, their own stuff. So if a child comes to me and saying, look, I can see lights around somebody, I say, okay, what kind of lights? And I have this conversation. And I think from now, doing this nearly 21 years, intuitively, I know whether it's a pork pie, a lie, as we say in our house, or it's the truth. I get this in a feeling, in a knowing that, yes, it's correct, or no, it's not.
So you pick that up. I understand that. But for those of us that may not be as in tune to you, how do we differentiate between our child having a psychotic episode and actually dealing with the paranormal or dealing with something? You know, I guess it fits under paranormal, whether it's a ghost or guardian angel or a demon. How do we know the difference between mental issues and, you know, real subjective moments?
Mental health is very undiscovered in all around the world, and I still think they've got a lot of work to do on that. Another thing is, I think if you know your child really well, you know where they're coming from. I think also as well is about attracting that kind of thing. I think also there's another aspect to it of looking at it as a soul lesson. But also, if it's a psychotic episode, if someone came to me about that, I haven't come across that, but I would look at the right channels. I would go to the right people. But I haven't come across that. So I think it's about the intention as a parent of working in the light. I think also as well, it's about children. Right, up until the age of 8 or 9, they're very good at telling the truth. They don't lie. I mean, yeah, they do sometimes. They tell little white lies, but it's more than that. It's more than, a lot of people see shadows. That could be the shadow people, or it could be just their fear. I would dialogue a lot to find out what's going on. And then I make a decision whether it's psychotic, whether it's supernatural, whether it's just they're a figment of imagination. Because there's three levels of it.
I've got to tell you really quickly, Kylie, I ask this question about how do you know whether it's a psychotic break or a paranormal event, right?
Uh-huh.
And as I'm discussing this, I'm in my home studio. My one cat, hand to God, this is exactly what he just did, started running around and he would stop and look up and start crying out at the ceiling like he's talking to my wife or I. And then he jotted down the hall a little bit and then hit the ground like he was being threatened by one of the other cats or afraid one of the kids was going to step on it. And he sat there and watched it like something was walking past him. And as soon as it did, he got back up and then ran the opposite direction again. And then came flying like a bat out of hell out of the room and is cowering in my corner right now.
Mm. Well, I would send... what's the cat's name? Because I love cats. I've got five.
Honey.
Honey. Well, I would say to Honey, if you listen to Kylie, I would surround Honey in white light. And then I would ask that cat's guardian angel to be with it. And whoever's there to turn it to the light. Because it's not fair on the cat. I had a cat, Cassie. She's passed now. It'd be 3 years this year, but when she passed, when she was 19, if she didn't like somebody, she would hiss like your honey. And she was very intuitive. Cats, like back from Egyptian times, they're amazing. So I would say to the cat, to Honey, you're okay. I'm with you. I'm protecting you. But yeah, that's how I would deal with it. But there's obviously something needs shifting, needs moving for her to accept it. Is she quite a scaredy cat? Pardon the pun.
No, that's what's so funny to me about this is she's, you know, it's just funny timing. Nothing has happened in this new house that my wife and I have moved into. And for you and I to be discussing this one topic at this moment about how do we know if it's something imaginary the kids are witnessing or is it psychotic and that, you know, noticing things that maybe the rest of us don't. And all of a sudden this cat starts reacting as though something is frightening it, or it was just very strange timing for it. So,
I think also cats are very good at sensing energy. They're very good at like hissing them because my five do. I mean, you talk about psychotic episodes. I worked in Northern Ireland about 22 years ago, and I don't know whether I'm allowed to say this, but I met a guy who had been on lithium for about 10 years. He witnessed a murder in Northern Ireland, his own father. And they put him on, he didn't talk about it, and they put him on lithium. And he became a zombie. And I looked into his eyes, and there was nothing there. It's like his soul had disappeared. And that will always stay with me. Because it was quite narrowing to look at this child, this adult, who witnessed this murder, and because he couldn't talk. But when I looked into his eyes, there was nothing there. But when I looked at him, he smiled. He recognized me. So what I'm saying is that's the only thing that I've come across that was disturbing is the wrong word to use, but it really touched my soul that so like a child witnessed a trauma, and because they couldn't talk about it, they stuck him on drugs. I think that was sad, you know, to deal with that situation.
I completely agree. It's now kind of going back to children. When children see things, you know, and they're communicating with something that's sight unseen to us, should we ever address the imaginary friend? If they don't seem frightened by it, should we treat it as though it's just a friend visiting? How should we go about dealing with that?
From my own experiences, I would entertain it if it's not affecting the child, if the child is not scared by it. If they're scared about it, then I give my Ruby certain techniques to, you know, to tell it to go away. Yeah, I mean, imagination is a fantastic thing to have. Daydreaming is a fantastic thing to have. Imagination we all have, even as adults, okay? And I would entertain it and see how it goes. See what happens. See how it develops. I mean, what I'm trying to say is, of my children, I never forced them to do meditation. I've never said, right, this is psychic lessons, because some people thought I did that. They had the schooling in the UK, which balanced the left brain and the right brain. I balanced with creative stuff like arts and crafts and cooking and drawing and working with nature. And they could, I'm not just saying it because I'm their mum. They could, they're well balanced kids. You know, they might not be when mum says go and clean your room. And yes, I'm born on Halloween. I'm a proper witch, as they call me. But what I'm saying is I would entertain it, and it's each child is different. Each child's imagination is magnificent, and adults too. So yeah, entertain it and see where it goes. See what happens. You know,
I know when I lived in a house about, I guess 15 years ago, and my son Nathan was there. He was in his room, and he came into my room, and he goes, "Dad, can my friends spend the night?" And I'm like, "What friends?" "My friends in my room." And I said, "Sure, buddy, they can spend the night." And he said, "Okay." And he went back in and told them that they could spend the night. And then he comes back out, and he's got his phone. He goes, "You need to tell their parents, Dad." Which I thought was weird, because he had never had sleepovers at this point, unless it was with his, you know, aunts and uncles or friends like that. But he'd never had friends spend the night. And that he suddenly knew I had to call and get permission from their parents. So I pretended to make a few calls and ask permission, and then handed him the phone. And he went back merrily along playing in his room for a while, when suddenly I heard him scolding someone in his room. And I come in, and I'm like, "What's going on?" As I would if he was having friends over and started getting into a fight. And he goes, "I don't want them here, Dad. They're not listening, and they're not being good." And I'm like, "Okay, well, what are they doing?" "I don't want to say, Dad. I don't want them here anymore. You need to make them leave." And I'm like, "All right, you guys get out of here." And Nathan walked with me, and he insisted I open the door and make them leave. And I just thought, I said, "Well, this is really taking it to another level, son. But okay, well, I'll play. Daddy will play with you." And, you know, I'm trying to treat it pseudo seriously, right? And I'm doing it with a tongue-in-cheek and smirk. And I'm like, "I'm sorry, guys. If you can't play nice, you're not allowed to stay here," and blah, blah, blah. And I go and I shut the door. And he goes walking back into his rooms, arm folded. He was mad for hours after that. It wasn't just like the play ended. He was seriously hurt and offended by whatever they had done. And I thought, and I'm sitting there, I'm like, okay, I'm the big bad paranormal guy. And I think we might have just had an experience here that that I wasn't familiar with. So to me, Kylie, that was kind of this holy shit minute. You know, I think something supernatural just happened.
But as a parent to a parent, I think you've done really well there, because you played along with it. There are two ways of doing it. Like when my kids, when they were little, they were having a tea party, and their guests were spilling tea, messing cake, mucking about. And so you open the door and you play along with them. Right, off you go. You know, a bit like when you have a dolls round. But also is another aspect of it where I've met parents that are freaked out by their child's imagination and will, as I say, poo-poo everything they say. So the child becomes less intuitive. So that side, that right brain side, that starts to shut down. And so the left brain becomes more predominant in the whole of the body. So, you know, I commend you doing it. I know it was a freaky moment. I've had those where there was a time when Jade was younger, about 4, 5, 6, and I was brushing my teeth. It was the 9th of September, and I don't know whether she was connecting me on the telepathic level, but I thought, oh, so it could have been my grandfather's birthday today, the guy from Northern Ireland, and she says, it's Sammy's birthday today, and Sammy was her imaginary friend. Was she connected to my grandfather? You know, there's those kind of things. So that was a holy moly moment as well.
What is your what was your grandfather's name?
John Francis.
So she couldn't mistake it for Sammy. Yeah, I was going to say maybe it was a version of it, but no.
Exactly.
So you think more intuitively she was picking up on your thoughts about the birthday, and she was creating that as part of the story of her best friend or her imaginary friend.
I mean, she could have done. I mean, Sammy turned up one day and was under the bed. Now, before I met her father, before she was born, I had a miscarriage, and I always believed it was a boy. And she called him Sammy, and Sammy stayed with us for a very long time until one day she woke up crying and said, Sammy's gone away. Bear in mind, they always say the first child has an imaginary friend, an intuitive playmate, but Jade's had one, Amber's had one, and Leo's had one. So that debunks the psychologist aspects of it's just an only child, the eldest child, has an imaginary friend, a spiritual playmate. So, you know, I argued and said to them, you know, this happens in my family, you know, what about yours? So there's different ways of doing it, but nurturing a child's imagination and self-esteem is important, as well as nurturing their spiritual side.
Can you tell me then, with all the stories you collect and you know, certainly being a paranormal themed show here, do you run into many of the imaginary friends who are destructive, who are teaching or trying to get the kids to do bad things?
The only bad things I've come across is drawing on walls, and my Ruby does that. You know, Jade used to do it when she was younger. She said, oh, Sammy told me to draw on the wall. I thought, yeah, right, okay. And she decorated the toilet seat with toothpaste. I think also as well, you know, as I'm talking to you and writing my second book about this subject, I think also it's about the kids' intentions and also their soul lessons. And also it's got to be part of their growing up. I'm not talking about psychological stuff. I'm talking about, I attract light things. The spooky stuff I always leave by the front door. I'm not saying that I haven't had those experiences because I'm born on Halloween. What I'm saying is I don't attract that. So I attract good intentions. But there's another way of looking at it, because I am training to be a psychotherapist as well. But I'm looking at the spiritual aspect of it. Some people draw more to get an attention, and again, is intuitively knowing. Whether, like, as you're talking, I know your experiences are real. It's this innate knowing. You know when someone's lying to you and you damn well know they're lying? It's kind of like that. I'm not saying I know Charles right. But it's, for me, for doing this for so long, you know, my intuition is like a muscle. I use it every day. It's like going to the gym. I go to the gym anyway. I meditate twice a day. I'm in tune with my intuition. So what I'm saying is, when a child comes to me and says, you know, Auntie Esmeralda has told me to do these kind of things, I listen to the child, and then I work out from my own experiences, from my own training via counseling, hypnotherapy and psychotherapy, whether it's yes, it's this is correct or no, it's not. It's based on a case by case story. Because I don't know, it's not being from ego. I'm a heart-centered being. And by the way, I need to thank Gavin from Six Books sorting this out. Sorry, Gavin, I completely forgot in the beginning because I got very excited doing this interview, because this is my passion about talking about children. Children have boundaries as well, you know. They learn from us.
What are some of the more unnerving stories that you've heard regarding things like imaginary friends?
Kids getting really scared and won't sleep in their room.
But for what reasoning? I mean, it's, you know, obviously we know that's the end result, is it the children, but what was going on that led them to these moments where they, you know, they were having a break, that they were afraid of what was going on?
I think also is, in one case that I had, they had a lot of trouble at home where the family was splitting up, you know, mother, father wasn't getting on very well, and the child was doing it for attention. And another time was every time they painted the wall, the child would say that an imaginary friend made them, you know, they would decorate the wall and then they would redraw on it like several times. I had one, somebody rang in and said that, that they were told to hurt a pet rabbit. And, but the way the woman was talking, it didn't add up, because when she was talking, she was contradicting herself. And then I was asking questions, well, is the rabbit still alive? And then 1 minute she said yes, the next minute she said no. And then I don't know whether she had, was intoxicated with alcohol, but, it just didn't seem right. One, in my heart, and then she was talking, and then people were emailing in and saying, is this woman okay? Another one said about, the imaginary friend told him to walk across the road and play chicken, you know, when the cars were coming. That's the, you know, bad case scenarios that way. But the rabbit incident, there was just, maybe she was having a nervous breakdown, I don't know. But
it reminds me, I don't know if you were ever a fan of the TV series the Twilight Zone.
Yeah, I remember the Twilight Zone.
But there's that episode with Billy Mummy as a little boy, when he's very close with his grandmother and she dies, and she keeps calling him on his little toy phone, and they think he's having an imaginary conversation, but she's trying to convince him to kill himself so that he could join her. And it's one of the more disturbing episodes I've ever seen.
The
loving grandmother wants the kid to end his life so they can be together again. That's a freaky one. But here you've got something portraying itself to be someone who loves you, and it's trying to give you this bad advice.
Definitely. And it's almost like that to me is like control from the other side. You know, from my own experiences of going to the light, and I have been to the light, you know, it's supposed to be a loving experience. It's a bit like, what's the film with Kiefer Sutherland and Julia Roberts? Flatliners. That freaked me out about, you know, when they died, they saw these kind of good things, but in fact it wasn't, it was awful. Yeah, I know. I think also it's down to the makeup of the person. You know, I think I remember watching that, and that the episode, The Twilight Zone. I used to get freaked out by Ronald Dahl used to write them, Tales of the Unexpected, with the woman used to dance. Do you remember that? That's what we had in the UK. And there were some freaky stories. I would put my foot down and say, look, hang on a minute, kind of thing, you know, this has got to stop. And then I would go in and do a cleansing exercise.
There's that chance, though, that what if it really is your loved one? And I don't mean the ones that are trying to get your kid to hurt themselves. Do you want to cleanse? Do you want to clear the area? Because grandma may be there, and it may be frightening for the child because they're not used to seeing this. But the person isn't necessarily there trying to harm or frighten the baby.
Yeah.
You know, do you want to send away somebody that you love and is there checking on your children?
Yeah, I don't. If it was something negative, then I would send it. But if it's something, I would talk to grandma and say, come on, grandma, I love your cookies, right? I know you. Because when spirits sometimes cross over, as you know, they get confused, don't they? They get confused.com. That's what we say. It's a... in this country, they get confused, they don't know that they've passed over, and that is why sometimes spirit will haunt a home or a castle, because they don't know they're dead. So they're clanking around in their chains thinking, you know, this is my gaff, this is my home, get out of my house, that kind of thing. It's and you got to go, right? But on the other sense is, I would have dialogue with grandma who bakes the cookies and say, look, stop upsetting the child. And then it settles down. I had a friend of mine, and she has somebody in her house, and the guy died in a car accident. He got hit by a car and they drove off and left him to die. and he's in their house. And we were out, and every time she's out, he's standing behind her. And her little boy has said about him, and it freaks her out, but not the husband. And I said to her, look, because somebody else went in the house and said, oh, this is a really negative vibe in here. And when I went in there, I didn't sense that at all. Now, could that person went into the house? You know, sometimes is some people like to control, okay? And they will say it's negative vibe, it's make they're feeling it. But when I went in there, when I was talking to her, I didn't sense that at all. I sensed that the spirit was troubled, and I said to my friend, I said, look, do you want him to go or not? Have a conversation with him and say, look, you can stay in the house, in this room, providing you don't wake up my son. And it stopped. You know what I mean? So that's happened a couple of weeks ago, and everything's chilled. Everything's fine. Everything's cool.
Is it interesting though? I mean, you're an intuitive. You're sensitive to these things. Is it strange that you're not picking up on it until the children bring it to your attention that it's going on? Why will we feel, you know, why can two of us be in the same room at the same time? Both of us have abilities to sense things, but you can sense something that is totally unavailable to my senses.
Because I think sometimes it's almost like we all work on a different frequency, you know what I mean? Like a TV channel. I think that way. I think if we could see everything in one sense, I think that it would be like really messed up. Have you seen a program called Torchwood?
Yes, of course. It's a spin-off of the Doctor Who series.
Yeah, I love Torchwood, and I love Russell T. Davis, and I'm praying because I adore Russell T. Davis. There's one episode when all the timelines cross over and everything's confused. I think that might be for spirit. If everybody could see the same thing, I think everybody would get confused and you'd have a lot of thoughts going in your head. I think that we're all like our own TV channel. This is how I can explain it. We're our own TV channel and we tune into that thing at that certain time. I will have my friend in front of me, we were thinking about the same person, and I bring that person up and she says, oh, I was just thinking about her, and we think about the same thing. Is that telepathy? You know, so that's my perception. Somebody else would challenge that, and that's great. That's what I love, because I like to be challenged in that lot. So, I mean, you could get five psychics in a room. Right. You can get a sense of something. You know, somebody would work from their heart. Somebody would work from a solar plexus. Somebody work with their crown. And they would get all different things. But I think also as well, you would get a sense of reality, some connection of that place. I mean, that would be a great experiment to do, you know, put two children in the room that are intuitively, you know, imaginary friends, and let's see what's happened. Obviously you're going to get parents' permission to do that, but you know what I mean? It would be very interesting to see if they could do that. But again, I think we all work on different frequencies, different channels. Not two channels are the same. I mean, that's my interpretation of it. I am not an expert, as in expert, you know, with a TV channel. That's my perception, kind of thing, you know.
Well, let's do this. We have to take a break. We've got Theater of the Mind coming up. It's time now to shuffle down the hallways of the Dark Hives. In this, a story that's brought to you, a real life tale of the supernatural. Mommy, somebody's living under my bed. Next on Theater of the Mind. When my son Caleb was very young, and I mean so young he wasn't even speaking very much, he used to sit and play happily in his room for hours. Sometimes I would come in to check on him and find him lying on his belly, looking under the bed and speaking in baby babble, occasionally breaking into spontaneous fits of giggles and laughter. I never thought much of it, just assumed it was his active imagination, and he was a playful child. As he aged, he began to tell my wife and I about the boy that lived under his bed. He would talk with the boy endlessly and laugh. Sometimes his friend would come out and they would play around in his room. Power Rangers, Army Men, you name it, they played it. Other times, Caleb would just lie on his back and read to his friend. We had always wished we had another child, but it was not meant to be. As it was, my wife had miscarried before Caleb, and her pregnancy damn near killed her. We were and always will be parents to one child, but he's amazing, well-behaved, loving, funny, and very smart for his age. One night, as we watched TV downstairs, we heard a loud thump, quickly followed by a wailing cry coming from upstairs. We ran to check on our son and opened the door. He sat there on the carpet crying, and his breath heaving as he stared brokenhearted towards the bed. "Hey, what happened, Kale?" I questioned. My son pointed under the bed and said,
"He pushed me off the bed, and when I told him it hurt, he called me a baby and slapped me."
Sure enough, there across my son's face was a fresh, child-sized handprint. I got down and looked under the bed and sternly addressed the imaginary thug, taking refuge under his bed, and said, "Play nice, Justin, or you have to leave." Caleb had told us the boy's name was Justin, and we'd all taken to calling him that, leaving spots on the couch during movie time for him, and occasionally, when he found us worthy, he would join us at the kitchen table, so we always made a spot for him there, too. This had been the first time that they had ever had a disagreement, I guess you could say. So to distract my son and calm his crying, I suggested we go to the kitchen for a snack. It's important to note, at this point, we believe this boy Justin was just part of my son's imagination. We never had anything else go on to make us feel otherwise. On our way down the stairs, my son's door slammed shut. Now, this wasn't an uncommon occurrence, as we often left windows open and cross breezes would slam doors on a regular basis. We got down the stairs, and I dipped into our Darth Vader cookie jar to fish out a few tear-stopping morsels, when I happened to look up at the window, and I noticed there was no breeze outside. The flag was laying flat against the pole in the backyard. I was instantly brought back to the here and now when I heard Kale sniffling behind me, waiting for his treat. We had a few more instances of yelling outbursts, followed by a very unhappy Caleb, but luckily there were no more slapping or pushing off of beds. My wife and I had assumed Caleb had been horsing around on his bed and fallen off, and in the heat of it all, accidentally struck himself as the handprint was about the size of his own hand on his face. Now, on a whim, I decided to visit a site that I'd heard about on our favorite paranormal-themed podcast, the best in paranormal talk radio, they call themselves. I opened my laptop and typed into the browser www.diedinhouse.com. I looked over the site and decided for peace of mind to just run a simple background check on our house. After paying my fee and entering the address, I was surprised how fast a result popped up. It listed previous owners of the house and that one owner did in fact pass away on property. It was about 30 years prior, but alas, his name wasn't Justin. It was Theo Rolls. I decided to keep playing detective and typed in the name Theo Rolls and the city and state I lived in. And wouldn't you know it, his obituary popped up. I read through the short and sweet listing and felt my heart leap into my throat as I read the line, "Theo was preceded in death by his loving parents George and Dottie Rolls, his beloved sister Ethelyn, and his young son, Justin." I couldn't believe my eyes. I called my wife over and showed her what I had dug up. We both shared an uncomfortable laugh and assured each other it was just coincidence. That night, as we tucked Caleb in, he asked me to stay for a few more moments after his mom left.
"Daddy, Justin is sorry he has been bad and doesn't want to leave. He just wants to live under my bed, and I said it's okay if it's okay with you."
I smiled and told Caleb, "Justin is welcome to stay as long as he plays nice and doesn't scare you anymore." We exchanged hugs, and I started to get up off the bed. Then I felt it. A cold, childlike hand grabbed my ankle from under the bed, wrapping its chubby fingers around it. It was frigid and alarming. I yanked my foot up and was met with uproarious giggling from my son. "What's so funny?" I demanded as my brain tried to figure out what just happened.
"Justin got you, Daddy. You didn't say he couldn't scare you."
I shot a dirty look at the bed and followed it up with a wry smile and a sheepish nod of my head. "Well, you can't do that to me or Mom either," I insisted as I left the room, shutting the door behind me. I needed to share my experience with my wife when I heard the distinct, muffled laughs of not one, but two kids coming from my son's room. A cold shudder ran the length of my back, and I thought I should hold off telling my wife, as I was pretty sure she was going to pack us up that night to move out. I waited until today, the day I shared this story, to tell her.
Beyond Darkness.
Hello and welcome back. You're listening to the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Joining me today, Kylie Holmes, and we're talking about imaginary friends or intruders of the supernatural. Intuitive children, Kylie, if our children are exhibiting abilities like this and they're seeing things, they're communicating with what we might believe to be something supernatural, should we always encourage that? Or, you know, I think people are just so afraid their children are going to be looked at as insane, goofy, you know, bizarre, maybe even creepy. How do we temper that so that we can let them develop their creativity, let them develop this ability, but not do it in a way that might embarrass them in the future?
That's a really good question. I was just thinking, as you were talking about it, I was thinking about my grandma, my nan, when you were talking about that. And I think that also it's more acceptable now to be intuitive than it was, say, in the 50s and 60s, because if you heard voices, you got electric shock treatment. You know, that's the barbaric way, especially in the UK. If your child displays imaginary friends, there are ways of encouraging it. Listen to your child. It's the most important thing we can do is just to listen as a parent or a guardian or a grandparent or an aunt, an uncle, sister, brother. The next thing is to maybe get them to draw a picture of their imaginary friend, like I did with Jade and Sammy, which is in Intuitive Children. And don't push the child to talk about their supernatural experience, because they from my own experiences, they can clam up. They won't be able to shut down. Another thing is, if it's really scaring them, distract them. Take them for a walk, go into the park, go into nature, do some baking, do something completely different. If it's really traumatic, then maybe you see a health professional. But encouraging a child's imagination through drawing is a great way. Telling stories, going into nature, picking up stones, making them magical stones. I had one child that would, I've just got a new book out actually called There's No Such Thing as Monsters. It's about a child seeing monsters in his bedroom. And that is sort of about imaginary friends, but it's about monsters, and it's done really well. It's my first picture book. But I remember a child had monsters in his bedroom. So what we did was we got, when he woke up at night and he saw things in his bedroom he didn't like, he would have a water spray by his bed and he would spray the monsters away. And it worked. It was just empowering that child to feel magical. So we got some glitter, we got some water, and I made it up and said, this is magical monster spray. When the monsters wake you up at night, the shadows, you spray the monsters. And within a couple of months, it went away. And he doesn't have to use it anymore. But that took a long time to find a way to empower the child to basically shoot the monsters. So that was just a simple technique that I used.
And we've talked about that on the show, and we've encouraged some people to do that in the past. But the problem I've run into is some of the parents come back to me and they're like, it's not working. And now my kids are really upset and they don't trust me. They think I'm lying to them on how to deal with this. That gets a little unnerving.
Sure, I agree. The next thing I would do is change the furniture around the bedroom. Okay, literally get everything out, clean it. Okay. And as you're cleaning it, saying the monsters has gone. Yeah. And then put the furniture back. If they come back and say it's still not working, I'll do it again. I'll get the child to help me, then I'll put the crystals in the room. If that's the case, then I would, another time, I would say, right, change bedrooms with another child. Nobody's come to me and said, what's the word? You know, we're moving home. A bit like there was a ghost story in the UK where the ghost traumatised the whole family. But what I'm saying is that's what I would do. I would talk to the family and say, right, what's going on here? How, when does it happen? What time does it happen? You know, what's the child's bedroom
but
like?
If something's tormenting one of the children, is it a good idea to switch rooms and put another child in there? So now you've traumatized two children?
No, I don't think traumatizing two children. I think it's almost empowering that child, you know, to change it around. Depending on the scenario and what's going on, but I don't believe in co-sleeping with a child in your bed. I just believe in trying to work out it. It's no good yelling at a child and saying, my God, you're absolutely stupid. You can't do this. You know, I need my sleep. Talk to the child. Dialogue. Dialogue is important. Communication is important. Talk to the child and say, look, what's going on? I'm just saying in a scenario changing rooms, the other child might not know what's going on. Also as well is I would look at like, on a day-to-day level, emotional level, what is going on at school? Is the child being bullied? Is it the bullying that's actually keeping the child awake? Is it actually the bullying that's going on and not the imagination, the children's imaginary friend or that intuitive child? You know, grandma's turned up about baking. She's confused because she's passed over. That kind of thing. My bedroom's very quite busy at night where I'm meditating and people pop in and that lot. But I put the intention down and saying, do not wake my kids up. If you wake my kids up, you know, you are going to get the wrath of Kylie Holmes on your doorstep. You're not going to, you know what I mean? You don't mess with me. And that's not in the negative sense of being from egotistical. That is just putting the law down, the rules down, saying, when I shut my door at night, go away, leave me alone. And I think also as well is as a child, okay, it's to distinguish, like on a scale of 1 to 10, how it's affecting the child and how I would deal with it. And I would find different ways. And if I'm beaten and I cannot do it, then I will say, I'm sorry, I can't fix this, you know. I will be honest, but I've not come across that at the moment, but I could do. So, you know, I would try and find a way forward.
Do we look at, the movie The Sixth Sense kind of popularized the idea of a child that could see these spirits, and maybe there's something these spirits are trying to do, get help, get answers. Should we encourage the children to speak to the spirits in our presence? Why don't you talk to them? Can you call them forward now? Are they here? What do they want? Is there something we can help them with? Should we walk them through that process as well to show them that they're empowered?
I mean, the sixth sense. Yeah, I think empowering is important. The Sixth Sense is a great film. I love it because it's got a great twist at the end. But also, empowering your child is the best way to do it. You know, have those conversations and say if your imaginary friend turns up and is scaring you, just say, I'm going to go and get my mum. That's what my kids do. I was just say, if you waken up and in the middle of the night and someone wakes you up and you see a face, you tell them your mum's going to come and sort them out. And I'm laughing because I remember my son shouting out, mum, it's back. So I would go in there and say, what's going on? He said, I said, right, off. And I'd open, like you did, I opened the door with your son. That's what I did with mine. Or even open the window and saying, get out of my house. Go. That kind of thing. You know, dialogue's important. But again, it's, I know I keep saying it's different for different people, but it is. Because you have a timid child, an only child, that has loads of imaginary friends. And then you would have a middle child in a family of, say, six. You know, the middle child, people say classical middle child syndrome, but it's not. It's just an imaginary friend. You know, that child at that moment in time can be serving a purpose to that child. It could be spiritual growth. It could be inventing. You know, intuitive children, I looked at child geniuses, you know, people playing pianos. Could that be a child from a past life? There's other past lives where a child has remembered being shot or murdered. you know, where did I get that information from? You know, it's just a tip of the iceberg, and it just expands into different realities.
All right. Now, when we're walking children through these experiences and we're, you know, you want to support them and not yell at them, not make them feel ashamed or downtrodden about them. And we teach them to empower themselves, in whatever method we come up with, whether it's squirting them with holy water or, you know, just praying them away or surrounding them in white light. How do we encourage children to not be afraid? Because that is a startling thing to see.
I mean, I've got a child at the moment that's always frightened in the dark, and he's 11. I've got another child who's frightened in the dark. There's two. They're both boys, which is quite interesting. Sometimes sleeping with the light on is pretty good, but all I always say is, God bless, turn to the light, God bless, turn to the light, and I keep saying that child to saying it. I teach them mindfulness techniques like breathing with their eyes open, not with their closed, because when they've got closed, they're going to get more scary. Having their eyes open and having an open meditation. Sometimes is I would take a child on a walk with the parents, obviously, and talk to them and saying, you know, what shape does this ghost have? If it could speak to you, what would it say? So you sort of turn it around. If it had a shape, if it had a colour, if it had an emotion, what would it say to you? And it's moving it outside it, but also is I would encourage the child, like looking at if it's waking them up at night. All I've done in the past is devise a sleep routine for the child, and usually within 7 to 10 days it stops, because it's empowering the child, saying, right, it comes at night, I can stop this, you know. Trying to think of a scenario where one
child... Have you ever come into contact when you go there that it is a malevolent force, something that we might consider the demonic or an angry spirit or maybe even an elemental or earth spirit?
Elementals, I remember leprechauns are pretty good, they're pretty cheeky. Because granddad, my Northern Irish grandfather, would tell me lots of stories about them. Fairies, if you've got fairies, put fairy cake out because they love the fairy cake. Malevolent, I've not come across, apart from when there was a friend of mine that I know that was 5, and she had some woman in her house. She died in the house. She didn't like the children. She didn't like children. And I conversed with her. And what this spirit would do would turn on kettles. She went through 10 kettles in a month. Not in a month, sorry, a year. It kept burning, you know, the element of a kettle. And she would get very angry because she didn't like the children making noises. And I encouraged her to move on, because she would wake up the children and they would start screaming. But it turned out also, because the mother didn't believe in this, the kids were feeding off the mum. Does that make sense? You know, they're feeding off the fear of the mum. So this ghost of this woman would appear when the mum was around, and the kids would see it and start screaming. That's malevolent, was burning kettles out, okay, putting the washing machine on at 2 o'clock in the morning with no clothes on in the machine. Again, I haven't encountered anything that kind of thing. But then if I did, I would sell to a child, ask the angels, ask Archangel Michael to come in, surround you in blue light. I would bring Raphael in for healing. And also, if it was in a bedroom and the child was in there, I would get the child to visualize angels all the way around the room, protection angels everywhere, on the ceiling, on the floor, everywhere, so that child could sleep at night.
What's your suggestion for families that, you know, there's a lot of families that have kind of turned away from the theology of religion, the church of religion. They might believe in the spirituality of it, but the idea of calling forth angels and archangels, and, you know, many people aren't even familiar on how to go about doing something like that, or their religion doesn't buy into that aspect of it. How do we start to shield, you know, children at that point?
I wouldn't, when you're calling upon an angel, it's not about the being religious and getting your prayer met out, I'm not being, you know, facetious that way. It's having this belief that there is a higher power. And I'm not talking about God, I'm not talking about aliens, I'm not talking about angels, I'm talking about a higher power to protect you. And when you feel this higher power in your heart, it makes you feel empowered. Yeah. So what I'm saying also is, like holding it in the light. Holding it in the light is a Jewish thing where they used to hold things in the light, and then it's just holding. How I can explain it, it's like holding it in the light and let the goodness go into it. So it's light versus dark. It's a bit like Star Warsy, but it does work. I don't think you really do have to be religious to connect with the angelic realm. You don't have to. I'm not religious. I personally do not like religion because of Northern Ireland. I lived and worked over there. I saw a lot of things that I didn't like, in the name of whatever it was out there. And basically, I'm not religious at all. I call myself a pagan. That's not really religious. It's connecting with Mother Nature. So basically, is out there is if you say you're in a line of traffic and you're stuck in a traffic jam, you can call upon the angel of moving traffics, and the traffic moves. And my kids and I devise these programs, saying angels, angels everywhere, push the traffic so we can get there. And the traffic moves. It is just an empowering thing, and empowering the children that they can do anything. And that's what it's all about, is getting control of it, not as in like control as in liturgical control, but feeling empowered that they can control the situation that they're in.
So if we're talking to them, should we encourage them, especially if they're dealing with darker things, to just go ahead and shut this ability off altogether, just so that it's not something that'll continue to bother them?
What I would say is, like, if something is really dark, I would say, okay, you've acknowledged it, I'm holding you in the light. And then just keep saying that, you know, and to empower the child that, you know, just hold it in the light. When you hold it in the light, it's surrounded in goodness, and it can't hurt. It can't hurt you. It can't harm you. And keep saying that as a mantra, because, you know, and when you keep saying that, and then they can switch it off. Or you'd get another child that I had was when they would go to sleep at night, their spiritual abilities would awaken because a child was relaxed. So I would say is when they go to bed at night, they have an inner dimmer switch, they turn the dimmer switch down or the light switch off. And that helped. Like I'm saying, is there's different ways of dealing with it.
That I get as well. But let me ask you this. So if my child does not exhibit these abilities, should I ask them to start trying? Should I encourage them so that they can maybe have a more enriched life, becoming more connected to that ability?
I think also as well, it's down to divine timing. So in enrich that, I would look at creative aspects of painting and drawing, that kind of thing, and writing, because in time that child will open up to it. That's my answer to that. So yeah, I feel also you cannot force a child to become spiritual or psychic. It's this innate.
Well, I know there's a lot of people out there that are trying to police their children, trying to teach their children this ability, and whether it's to exploit that and make some money off of it or whatever. But there are people that are doing that at this point. I just don't know. Is it healthy for children? Whoa, my system's playing back at me here. Sorry about that.
Okay.
What do you make of that?
I think if you force, it's almost like if you force someone to do something, they're going to rebel, and a child's going to rebel. If you're going to, with my own children, if they don't want to go to a swimming lesson, they're going to kick off. I really think it's wrong to force somebody to become psychic and spiritual. We are all intuitive. That intuition is in us. I think we all need to learn to find a way to tap into it in a positive way. If you force someone to do something, they're going to kick off and they're going to rebel and they go, I ain't doing this. No way. I'm not going to be psychic. I'm not going to be spiritual. I'm not going to get the lotto numbers. I'm not going to do this. You're going to become up against a brick wall every single time. I feel personally as a parent, I think if you force a child to do something that they don't want to do, okay, clean their room, they're going to kick off, but in a way they come round. But having psychic spiritual lessons, I think to me, is a bit an unhealthy way to encourage their intuition and their innate intuitive abilities, because it could go the opposite way. It could become malevolent in themselves because they will go anti that, you know, they will kick off and say, I'm not doing it. And I've come across that when the mother is very spiritual and light and the child is more interested in getting it and eating mud. They don't want to know. If they are meant to do it, it will come round. Let go of the expectation, because when we let go of the expectation, magical things happen.
All right. I only ask because, again, I know there are people that seem to be encouraging that and trying. And I don't know if that's just another skill we should be trying to teach our children. You know, we want them to be open and creative and imaginative. We want them to have all the abilities that they should have set before them. But I was just curious, where do we draw that line?
I think in schools, especially in the UK, I don't know about the States because I haven't looked at the education system. I think that we need to learn about intuition, how to enhance it. But if it's forced, it's not going to work. You know, from my own experience, you can't force somebody
but
to be
psychic. But that's how we build a muscle, right? I mean, yeah, supposedly yeah. Everybody has the inherent ability to do this.
Sure.
What's
yeah.
it going to take to get us there?
I think if a child is born into that family, and I think also as well is from my own experiences, some families I've come across too, they encourage their child's spiritual growth, but in a positive light. But if it's forced and pushed and manipulated, because some people do manipulate that. What I'm saying is, for example, you know, when you've got to push your parent that wants them to take them to the ice rink and they were a ice superstar and then they push their child to do it. That's when the rebellion starts, that they don't want to do it. That's just an example that could happen with spiritual psychic lessons. I think intuition should be taught to connect with it in schools, maybe through meditation and mindfulness, so it has an underlining key. So this is your intuition. It's a muscle. And I agree with you that way. But again, if it's forced, it's not going to work. You're going to have a lot of rubbish to deal with. On an emotional level.
All right, so let's just go through. Give me, you know, kind of your do's and don'ts for intuitive children. You know, if you had to, you know, boil it down to the essence, what would it be?
The essence is allow a child to be themselves within reason. You know, have healthy boundaries when you're helping them develop their own intuition. But if you force them to get the crystal ball out, and they can't see something, and you can, this is from an experience, that kid's going to feel really rubbish about themselves because they can't see what you're seeing. Tread carefully, do gentle things, like connecting with the tree, for example. Trees are fantastic. Oak trees are great. Hugging trees are fantastic. You know, you could teach a child about energy sitting by their back against the tree and asking them, if in that way inclined, how do you feel about this tree? Can you sense this energy? What does the energy say to you? If it had a colour, what would it say? And create dialogue that way. Do it in a creative way rather than a forced way, because then you'll get results. The results meaning a happy child, a happy, contented child that is happy to do work with their intuition, but also up into the ages of 8, kids work with their intuition. You know, my kids say the wrong thing to the right person sometimes. I'll be talking about them. And now I've learned to have the conversation to myself rather than saying it out loud. And then Ruby or Leo will say, oh, you said this about this person. No, I didn't. Yes, you did, Mum. You told us not to lie. So I get hung, literally, which is quite funny. Amber, who's 17, she's learning to drive. She used to do that a lot. And she has razor-sharp intuition. And now she does not like liars. She absolutely hates them. My God, you know, her first boyfriend, bless her, if she's listening to this, if he lies to her, I'm crossing myself as I say this and I'm laughing. God help him. Because, you know, if she had been watching Marvel films again, if she had, like, thunderbolts in her hands, she's going to zap him. She's going to really say, oi, mate. Do not lie, you know, and in some sense, I've taught my kids right from wrong. I'm a single parent of 4 and have been for quite a long time. But what I'm saying to them, I said, is you feel it in your heart whether someone's telling you the truth or not. And you know, go with that. I said, and it's different for different people. My son is very sensitive. He's 13 and he gets hurt easily. He's a beautiful soul. Love him. And his bedroom and him, and we don't get on. It's quite funny. I have to laugh on the other side. But he doesn't like people who lie. And he finds it quite hard because he's a sensitive soul in a school that is very strict. And he's struggling, bless him, not because of the rules, but because of the strictness and the lies that some of his friends, he calls them lies, that some of his friend says, because he knows what is the truth. And from an early age, you know, you get this feel about somebody, go with it. And they do. My 5-year-old Ruby, she hangs people, not literally, but. And I have to laugh because, in a way, I think it's great, you know.
So, keeping that honesty. And I say it somewhat tongue-in-cheek here, but eating and abilities, that definitely goes hand-in-hand, wouldn't you say, Kylie? That if you're polluting yourself, it's going to be harder to get through that bog of toxins that are in your systems to make you more clear?
Yeah, I mean, I love that. I love that commercial. Can you send me a box to the UK? Because that sounds fantastic. I wasn't being facetious when I said that, because that's what we do. We sit and cook, even though Amber likes, you know, take over and does all the cooking. Yeah, it's important. I mean, I'll be honest with you. I have a McDonald's now and again. We have a pizza from, you know, now and again. But we cook fresh every day, and it's important. I think also as well is if you're clogging up your systems and with a child, you know, you're looking at the chakra system, and a lot of people have been talking about the new chakras, the higher ones as well, which I think some intuitive children use. But also as well is, you know, that clogs up and stuff. And, you know, if they've got certain pains in their tummy that could, talk about other things a bit about stress or fear about certain things. But yeah, I think it's important. Also, drinking water is very important too. You know,
I agree. You know, I've been doing my best to kick these soda habits. I drink so much soda and caffeine and garbage.
Same here.
And I've now tapered myself to 1 glass of soda a day. I've replaced that with about 5 or 6 water bottles. And I will tell you, I do notice clarity in my head. I don't have that foggy, thick feeling. Even though right now I'm fighting a chest cold and I don't feel great, I'm alert and I'm awake feeling. I don't feel like I'm walking in a cloud. And I think, boy, how much have I missed in life because I've been so hazy from all the crap I keep putting into my body?
I think, I mean, we're also a channel, aren't we? And I talked about TVs earlier. You know, we have to have the correct channel to, you know, to connect to the other side. And water is important. But also as well is, I think in, like, from my own experiences, some schools need to have water literally on tap, you know, to help stuff. But society has changed. I mean, if we look at, we go back to the Victorian times where, you know, we had a staple diet. We went to church on a Sunday, But now life has got too fast. You know, social media. I mean, Snapchat, what is that? You know, it frightens me. What I'm saying is we live in a faster environment. Everything is becoming so much more sci-fi. I do like the simple things in life. And having a healthy diet, healthy exercise and water is important. You know, is to maintain, like you said, the unclogginess and that kind of thing. I mean, I'm a vegetarian, and just by choice, because I find that if I eat certain meats, I become clogged up, not just emotionally, but it just doesn't, my system's like, Kylie, I can't cope with this. Why are you putting a burger in your mouth? And so I go the opposite way, you know, just to be much more healthier.
Those are just some ideas, folks. Again, and whether it's for you or for your children, just some really great ideas on how to start to tap into that potential, how to start making that work for you instead of feeling fear by educating yourself. And remember, fear, false evidence that appears real. If you're allowing these things to frighten you and not trying to gain an understanding of them, you're cheating yourself and your children out of what could be really remarkable situations. Kylie, thank you so much for joining us today and sharing some insights.
Thank you for having me, and it's been amazing, and thank you for inviting me, and also Gavin Gain from Six Books, thank you so much for suggesting that I should come on the show.
Thank you, Gavin. And we'll put up a link to her website so that you can find it in today's show. That's it for this week. We'll be back again next week with a whole brand new week of the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness.